The Jericho Network on Westwood One. Tell me you just didn't say that. Sucker! Oh yeah, talking about my friend Booker T. He's running his own wrestling promotion, Reality of Wrestling, and they're doing their debut show at World's Gym Arena, the brand new Reality of Wrestling Arena in Houston, Texas, on January 30th with special guest RVD. You can go online and find out all about that. Booker T is here today to talk about Reality of Wrestling and share some great stories from his own career, Hall of Fame career, WCW, WWE, TNA, and yes, Booker T's talking about the time he broke Stone Cold Steve Austin's hand in the original WCW invasion in WWE, and also the infamous grocery store brawl. How hilarious was that? We'll also get into Harlem Heat, his Hall of Fame induction, how much his brother influenced him, and what he teaches the kids coming up in his Reality of Wrestling school. It's a great conversation, a very funny conversation. Booker's such a character, big goofball. Another reason why you should just subscribe to Talk is Jericho so you don't miss such amazing episodes as this. Subscribe on iTunes. If you subscribe, you'll never miss an episode, right? They're delivered right to your device of your choice the moment they're released, the exact moment, every Wednesday, every Friday, actually late at night, every Tuesday night around midnight, every Thursday night around midnight. You will get those directly to your device. And if you subscribe, let us know what you think. Leave us a comment or two and a five-star rating while you're at it. Give me them five-star ratings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I would really appreciate it. Get to iTunes and take care of that business for me. Then go over to ddpyoga.com/Jericho so they can get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. All right. You're going to love the DDP Yoga Now app. You get it for iOS and Android. I have it on my iPhone and I use it all the time now that I'm back with WWE. Got to do my DDP Yoga regularly so I can keep performing at the top of my game in the ring. I haven't been doing it as much lately. And after my first couple matches, I felt it. I felt the sting. So I started to do my DDP Yoga again on a daily basis, on a every other day basis. And boy, I feel strong like bull. And listen, I do it on the app. And the best thing about DDP's app is that I can get all the workouts right on my phone. It means I don't have to lug around the DVDs or the special little DVD player to plug into my laptop. My laptop doesn't even have a DVD anymore. My car doesn't have a DVD or a CD player anymore. You got to step into the now, man. You can do that on the DDP Yoga Now app. And the app even has live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center, recipes, nutrition guides. You can watch some live cooking shows. You can earn rewards within the app and redeem them for some cool prizes in DDP Yoga merch. The more workouts you do, the more points you get. The more points you get, the more merch you get. Okay, you're actually getting something to do DDP Yoga. It's a bribe and it's a good one. This is only going to help you because you guys know how much it helped me. DDP Yoga basically saved my career, gave me a better quality of life, and that's why Dallas wants to pass that Jedi-like knowledge along to you. And for you sexy beast listeners right here on Talk is Jericho, he's giving you the best price on DDP Yoga at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, okay? Then if you purchase DDP Yoga at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, you will get this, not one, not two, but 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. That's 3 free months. You got no other excuses, man. Get started on DDP Yoga today. It's one of the best decisions you can make for your health. And take advantage of this special offer. Get the lowest price for DDP Yoga and 3 free months of access to the DDP Yoga Now app by going to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. All right? You got to go do it now. I want you to get into better shape, and this can take you there. Just ask Jake the Snake how much it helped his life. And if you haven't seen the amazing documentary, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake, you have to check it out now. It's superb and it's available at iTunes now. You have to see his story and what Diamond Dallas Page and his gang did for Jake. They saved his life, literally, figuratively, every sense of the word. It is a tremendous piece of filmmaking. I want you to go check it out on iTunes now, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. And don't forget, don't miss out on the exclusive DDP Yoga offer at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You'll get the best price on DDP Yoga plus 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. You got to do it. Change your life. Get in the best shape of your life and go do it today. ddpyoga.com/Jericho.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, my.
Got my reality wrestling pen, got my reality wrestling notebook, and yeah, man, here we are. Boom. In the home of reality wrestling, run by himself, Booker T, my old friend. And it's funny, I pulled up and there's a big sign that says parking space reserved for Booker T.
Yeah, man, heck yeah, I gotta do it up big. I gotta, you know, treat myself like the boss. You know, come on here. Yeah, but it's awesome, man.
But you are the boss of your own promotion, which blows my mind, because I mean, you've been in the business about as long as I have, and you know how hard it is to run a promotion, yet you're doing it. You're doing a pretty big job so far.
You know, I've thought about this for many, many years. When I first got in the wrestling business, I said I want to open a wrestling school and, you know, run every, you know, wrestling, you know, company in town out of business, you know.
Yeah, right, you know, right. What
I mean? But I know, and the reason I say that is because I know how I got treated, you know, when I was coming up.
Right.
And I thought I could make it a whole lot better situation for these young guys trying to get into the business, who want to fulfill their dream, you know. And it's always that one promoter trying to hold them back, telling them they can't do this or they can't do that. Difference here is I tell my kids they can do anything, you know, they set their minds to, they set their hearts to, and, you know, and I go out there and work really, really hard for it. And you know, the whole thing is built around a bunch of young kids who, a lot of young kids have grown up to be young men, mm-hmm. with me, that I started to think 10 years ago. And, one of my kids, he's been with me, actually a few of them been with me for 10 years for the duration.
You've been running this school for 10 years now.
Yes. It's been 10 years. We had our 10 year anniversary in
wow.
December. We've been running the school and we've been doing the television show now for like 3 years, you know? So, it's been an awesome, awesome, adventure. Of you know, bumps in the roads, ups and downs, you know, topsy-turvy times, wondering if we're going to be able to stay alive, especially like back in 2008 when the stock market crashed. We thought we were going to have to close down. You know, just a few years ago, we thought we was going to have to, you know, we were having our last show at our Christmas Chaos, and boom, you know, life jacket came and, you know, brought us up out of there. Now, 3 years later, man, we on the cusp of actually being able to do something big with reality wrestling.
So when you're talking about, you know, you wanted to start your own school and start your own promotion, and we were talking earlier about things that you don't even think about as far as, you know, getting permits and all this stuff. Was it hard to get your own promotion up and running and start making a go of it?
You know, for the last...
Did you just pull out a wad of money out of your pocket?
The face of guys coming here.
You're a true promoter. You need a cigar now, too.
No, extremely hard. But the one thing I banked on was myself. Growing up in the neighborhood, and you know my story. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth or anything like that. And wrestling has been my trade. This is what I know. This is what I feel like I do well. I say, man, I got to make something out of this thing. When I first got in the wrestling business, I thought that way. I didn't think about, you know, I was going to be a star for the next 50 years or anything like that. I say, man, I got to make something out of this. This is what I do. So now I lay the carpentry work. I lay all the foundation down now to actually move and evolve into something else. And morph into, you know, from the wrestler, you know, you're like the butterfly, you know what I mean? You know, you got to know how to, you know, change in seasons, and that's what I've done very, very well. And starting this thing, it was hard. I spent a whole lot of money. I spent all of my money. I own everything now, though. And now we're actually getting ready to open up our own arena, and that right there is I pat myself on the back for it every night. You know, I just asked the man upstairs to give me enough time to finish my work, and I'll be ready to come home. And I got a lot of more work to get done. You know, to take this thing from a regional, you know, perspective here, all covering all of Texas, to finally taking the thing national, and then to take it international. That's my goal.
Really? Okay.
As big as I possibly can.
So how many shows do you do, like, on a monthly basis?
Well, what we do is, as of up until this date, we've just been doing one show a month, but we've been taping four shows out of that one setting. Now we're going to actually be able to add more shows to the roster because the television is hitting 900,000 households around the Texas area. So now we're going to be able to take it here and cover Texas first. We want to crawl before we walk. We want to make baby steps. We want to actually sneak up on everybody, you know, and not talk real loud, but, you know, make a big wave when we come through and let people see that reality of wrestling is something different. The makeup of it is a bunch of, like I say, young kids. My champion is a 19-year-old Spanish kid named Gino. He's been with me for 3 years. He's mm-hmm. a grown man, but he's 19 years old, and he's awesome. And my concept is, reality of wrestling is, young people seeing young people do something, they can inspire to actually be that, you know, to be a superstar, to be a WWE superstar. Sometimes that's maybe unattainable to the kid that's watching the show, but the kid that's watching Gino, oh man, mom, send me the reality of wrestling. That's what I want to do, and that's what I'm trying to create a utopia for young people to actually
good
do
word
thing. Yeah.
but that's what it was like
for Jim Jones. I got that from him.
When I was a kid, I wanted to get into the wrestling business, but to me, growing up in Winnipeg, you know, WrestleMania being in Madison Square Garden, it might as well have been on a different planet, because I didn't know where New York was. I didn't know how to get to New York or how you could actually, but Calgary Stampede Wrestling, I knew where Calgary was. I'd been there. So it gave me kind of a goal to focus on, and that's kind of what you're building here too in Houston.
You know, not only did that give you guys a platform, I tell you, man, I watched that Stampede. Those guys were awesome wrestlers. Mm-hmm. All of those guys were top-notch talent. You got a chance to work with some of the best guys in the world before you ever got a chance to work with the best guys in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's what Stampede, you know, gave you, and that's what Reality of Wrestling is teaching these guys. You know, you knew what it took to make it in the locker room before you ever knew what it took to make it in the ring, just because you was taught it. And that's what I teach my young guys. I teach them that it's, hey, it's going to be a lot of bumps in the road. It's going to be a lot of obstacles, but you got to figure a way, you know, over, around it, under it, and sometimes you just got to go straight through that obstacle, and that's what I teach my kids.
Do you ever work on any of these shows?
No, I'm a promoter, unlike most of the promoters, you know, that run their shows, they want to be the champ, they want to do all of the promos, yeah. They want to take up time from the young guys or anything like that. No, up until this point, I have not been on my show for 10 years. That's all been by design. My wife Charmel has been the general manager. Just this month, I took over her day-to-day operations as boss of the show, and I'm just now beginning to get some airtime, just because we're moving to a bigger.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're moving to a bigger arena. I know you just got really big TV in Houston last time I saw you. Yeah. That just happened.
CW, baby.
CW.
CW 39.
So when you're getting on CW 39, are they expecting to see Booker T to kind of put some eyeballs
on
the show?
Actually, they haven't been. You know, they've never asked me once, and I told them from the beginning what this thing was about. I'm trying to create something different. The show is not about me at all. I don't bring in stars, you know, that's been in WWE, WCW, and put them out there and make them bigger stars than my stars. I'm trying to create something, you know, to where my guys one day could possibly be household names. Our stars are our stars. Our fans watch our show to see our stars, such as TNA Once Upon a Time was, you know, AJ Styles,
right?
You know, Bobby Roode, you
Samoa
know,
Storm, Joe, the homegrown Joe. Guys.
Exactly. I mean, the fans tuned in to watch those guys, and they went away from that blueprint. They went away from the six-sided ring. They went away from, you know, something that they had built, and it almost killed them. It perhaps could have killed them. And I'm trying to use their same blueprint and create the same thing, but really push it and push it hard.
So that's how you're doing things differently. This is not like an indie promotion bringing in guys from everywhere, the indie guys. You're just doing it completely in-house?
Not completely in-house. I do bring in some wrestlers like the Heavenly Bodies, a couple of kids out of Jersey, which are really good wrestlers. Are they going to ever make it to WWE? Maybe not. But are they stars to me? Oh, of course they are. You know what I mean? I got this one kid named Solo out of the Maryland area. I'm getting ready to bring him in. He's the guy who's been knocking on the door. He do a lot of extra work when they come to town. But to me, I look at this guy and I say, man, he's a star. He could be a star here in Reality of Wrestling. So the guys that don't make it, they're going to be more than welcome to come here to Reality of Wrestling and become stars. And hopefully, with that light shined on them, you know, maybe someone will see them and come a calling and say, hey. I think you are ready for the big leagues, you know. And that's what we had. That's what I had working in ESPN coming up, you know, 5 days a week. You know, I never did a tryout or anything like that. I never did any extra work. You know, I've been a main eventer since day one, you know. No, but I say, you know, when I was on ESPN, I say, man, somebody going to see me, and they going to call me. I ain't got to call nobody. I'm talent, you know, and I try to teach my guys that. I tell them, you know, don't go down there and do that extra work. You know, you could be typecast as the extra for the rest of your life. You could be a rosebud every time, you know, they come to town, and you may never make it to the big show just because you have belittled yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, so I teach my guys, if you want to, you know, make it in this business, you know, you got to know that you're better than the guy that's next to you. You got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I look just as good as the guy that's out there. And then you go down there and you pay that money and you go to that tryout with 50 guys to 100 guys around you, and you show how good you really are in front of 50 or 100 guys. And the scream always rises to the top. Yeah.
But it's interesting, like you're a rare breed in the business, and that you're the total package, like few are. Big guy, tall, you can work, athletic, acrobatic, you can talk, great personality, great character. I mean, do you see things differently when guys walk into your school where, let's say, it's a little guy or a fat guy? Do you kind of say, like, come on, man, look in the mirror, or do you try and find what's good about him?
I do, you know what I mean? Just a story of one of my kids, Gustavo Mendoza. His name is Luis Mendoza, but I call him Gustavo. He came into my school when he was 17 years old, and he was this fat little Mexican kid, you know, and I was like, man, why are you here? You know, he's like, I want to, you know, join the school. And I was like, you know, come back when you're 18. Mm-hmm. So he came back when he was 18 years old, and literally he could not even do a front roll. He could not do a backwards roll like a little baby does. He could not do it. And I was like, man, look, go work out for 3 months and come back. And he went and worked out for 3 months, and he came back. You know, and I'm like, why? And I tried to talk him out of joining the school. And I said, why do you want to do this? He just said, man, I've been wanting to do this my whole life. And so I gave him a chance. You know, I signed him up to the school, and I tell all of my guys to bring their notepad. You know what I mean? So he brought his notepad, and I tell him, always write down, when you see me go off on somebody, write that down. Right, you know, what not to do.
Why, yeah.
Write that down. Don't ever write down what to do. Always what not to do. So he did that for about 4 months. And finally, we had a show. A kid couldn't show up to do the show. And I look at Gustavo. I say, Gustavo, if you can get in the ring and show me something, I'll put you on the show. And finally, because Gustavo got in, he did a good job. Got on the show. From that point on, Gustavo was not on a show. Gustavo Mendoza became so good, he became the reality of wrestling champion for 1 year straight. No one could take the title from him, because here you work off your merit, how good you are. No one could take the title off him because he was smarter than every one of my guys. And now he's my promo guy. He's worked for me. He's retired, went to college, and came back to continue his career. So that's what I got here with Reality of Wrestling.
You know, you're taking, I can tell you got a real gleam in your eye when you talk about mentoring these kids and mentoring these guys. Was there somebody that was like that for you when you first started in the business?
You know, my brother.
Yeah. Did you guys start at the same time?
Yeah, we started at the same time, you know, but I wouldn't say he mentored me the way I'm mentoring these kids, but my brother is the guy that I always looked up to and wanted to be like. And, you know, if it wasn't for my brother, I know I wouldn't be in this business. You know, he was the one getting to try it. I was just following him along. And who's this guy? You know, he's my brother. He work? Yeah, he's a worker. You know, oh, I'm looking for a tag team. You know, that's the way that happened, right. You know, by pure coincidence. But, but to actually be able to mentor these kids and actually, you know, give them a pat on the back, because you really never realize how much just a pat on the back could do for these kids. I've seen kids, you know, actually tears come to their eyes just from telling them they did a great job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, you never really know what they're going through at home, you know, and this may be that escape for them, you know, to come to, you know, leave all that behind. I know when I got into wrestling, you know, and I would go to the other side of town and leave all my friends on the other side of town, they didn't know what I was doing, you know, because wrestling was stupid, you know what I mean? Why are you doing that, you know what I mean? But it was an escape for me, you know, to be able to go out there and become a superhero and play act, you know what I mean, and do Shakespeare, Romeo
who
and Juliet.
Did you, Shakespeare? Yeah, who'd you train with?
I went to Ivan Pussy School, but Scott Casey was my trainer. Cowboy Scott Casey, you know, old WWC guy, and actually world class, as well as WWWF guy, you know. So I tell you, man, he was a guy who taught me the little things in the sport of professional wrestling, and I remember him to this day. And every time I talk to one of my students, I always refer back and say, you know, my trainer told me. You know?
Oh, yeah. And speaking of that, Sid Vicious, of all people, did a lot for you in your early days. I want to talk about that and tag in with your big brother, Stevie Ray, as Harlem Heat. I want to hear your side also of the classic, legendary Steve Austin grocery store fight. How great was that? But first, let me say thanks to one of the great sponsors of Talk is Jericho. It's a sponsor that your car will thank you for trying as well. Denso Iridium TT Spark Plugs. Okay, Denso has a tradition of innovation. Using their OE expertise, Denso products are manufactured to give you the right part and the right fit. First time, every time. Like Denso's new Iridium TT Spark Plugs, man. Iridium is in the platinum family, and it's the most corrosion-resistant metal known on Earth, resisting wear and tear and oxidization in the harshest of environments. The TT stands for twin tip, and this technology promotes the largest spark energy concentration and explosion. The result is better mileage, more power, and faster starts, all while reducing carbon emissions, so you get superior performance, and you can be green in the process. That's win-win, people. Denso also developed a proprietary 360-degree laser welding process, which creates a high-quality bond that ensures structural support. That's a fancy way of saying that these are high-quality spark plugs. A fancy way of saying these things are good, man. With plugs to fit most makes and models on the road, Denso's Iridium TT are designed to last more than 100,000 miles. Did you hear what I said? 100,000 miles? That's more than most cars drive. So trust me, these things will last for your car's lifetime. Denso, Iridium, TT Spark Plugs, they are that good. I'm telling you right now, go find your nearest dealer. Go to www.densott.com. And now through March 31st, Denso is offering up $16 back on purchases of their Iridium TT Spark Plugs. Do something nice for yourself and do something nice for your car, man. Christine needs to feel good. Do something nice for the environment as well. Mother Earth needs to feel good. Get Denso Iridium TT Spark Plugs and go do it today.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha F335 acoustic guitar, just $99. Or get a Luna Soprano ukulele, only $49. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing. Lessons for the beginner on your list. And gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
When you talk about working on ESPN, what company was that?
It was the Global Wrestling Federation.
Global.
Yeah, and me and my brother, we got the opportunity to actually work there for almost 2 years. You know, hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert, he put us together as a tag team. And, you
really?
Know, he said, you guys going to be a great tag team. I want you guys to wear suits. I want you guys to, you know, go out there and perform at a high level. You guys are going to be starting next week. So we show up to do the show, and we said, where's Eddie? Eddie got fired. You know, what about us? You know what I mean? Oh, well, the only thing we could do is give you a tryout. The rest is history.
What was your name when you guys were?
We were the Ebony Experience.
Ebony Experience. Yeah.
Booker T and Stevie Ray, the Ebony Experience. And just showed us the power of actually being able to go out and entertain, you know, because they hated us when we first came to that building. But when we left, you know, 2 years later, those same people, man, they cried. We got a standing ovation, you know what I mean? 3,000 people in full, you know what I mean, for the Ebony Experience. We got in that Z28 and made that ride down the highway to Atlanta, Georgia, man. It's been awesome ever since, man.
And the funny thing is, your real name really is Booker T.
Yeah, man, Booker T. That's my real name.
Which is amazing, Booker T and the
MGs, man. I got lucky,
man.
I got lucky. My dad name was Booker T. You know, my name is...
No kid. You're a junior.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, and what's crazy was I wanted to change my name when I turned 18 because all the kids used to, you know, tease me and call me Booger. You know what I mean? You know, I was Booger all the time, Booker T. I got in so many fights as a kid because my name was Booger. And I'm like, when I turn 18, I'm changing my name. And, you know, it turned out to be a pretty cool.
Does the T stand for anything?
You know, the T stands for nothing. It's on my birth certificate that way. Booker T. Huffman.
The letter T.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
So you're talking about going up the road to Atlanta. How did you get that call? Was someone watching you on ESPN?
Like I say, Sid Vicious. We were in the arena on a Saturday night, and the phone rang, and I remember Maniac Mike Davis. He was like, hey, guys, you guys got a phone call. You know, Sid Vicious. You know, like, what? You kidding me? Sid Vicious, you know.
Yeah, right.
Brother, you talk to him. You talk to him, you know. I mean, your brothers always get to talking, you know.
Oh, Stevie Ray, yeah. Talking. Yeah.
So he act like, yeah, what's going on? You know? But Sid was a guy who didn't know us from Adam, but he wanted to help us. You know what I mean? That's a lot of people really don't know the heart of Sid Vicious. You know, Sid has always had a reputation of being a, you know, hardcore guy. He'll lead a building at a, you know, on a whim to go play some softball, and all of that is true. but he brought us here. He said, "I'm going to do everything to get you guys into WCW." And because, you know, I got a project. I'm trying to get into the office. I want to do some office work, and you guys will be my first project. And we were like, cool, man. He said, you know, whatever I got to do, you know, I'm going to get you here. 6 months later, we were in Atlanta, Georgia. And not only did he bring us to WCW, but he put us up in his apartment for about 3 months. Mm. You know, and he made sure we got a raise every month. You know what I mean? And he taught us, you know, some of the you know, best experiences, you know, we possibly could have got, you know, was from Sid. I remember Sid telling us, you know, hey, guys, you're not going to get any promo time. They're not going to give you guys any promo time. So make sure you cut your promo on the way to the ring. Mm. All right? Just cut it on all the way to the ring. You cut your promo. You get in that camera's face, so you cut it.
Wow.
You know, so me and my brother, you know, came up with the promo on the way to the ring, you know what I mean? So we got more promo time than anybody on the show.
I remember that you're always talking on the way.
Always, yeah. You know, on the way to the ring. I talk, my brother talk, I jump back in, and he'll talk, you know, so it was just awesome, you know. And we created something, and you know, Sid was there for us all the way. Our first pay-per-view, Houston, Texas War Games, in the main event, Harlem Heat, and, you know, and our partners, you know, Sid Vicious and Big Van Vader. Can you imagine that? Can you picture that? Can't even imagine something like that.
Who are you working
with? We're working against Sting, Lex Luger, Dustin Rhodes, and...
it's a main event match.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it was a main, the main event.
Oh, the main event.
Main event. I'm in the main event, my first pay-per-view. You got to be kidding me. I've been a main eventer since day one, but that's another story.
Now you're officially in the main event.
Yeah, but it was awesome, you know, to have someone like Sid backing us all the way. And I always give Sid a lot of credit. Never have I ever, you know, put Sid down in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
Where did the name Harlem Heat come from?
You know, Dusty Rhodes, actually, we were throwing it around. Actually, Dusty wanted to come. He came up with Chi-Town Heat, you know, but we was like, man, it's cold. It's cold in Chicago. But Harlem Heat, it's cold in Harlem, too, but it just, you know, it sounds cooler.
Right, right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So we actually, you know, told him, you know, we loved, you know, Richard Roundtree, you know, Cotton Comes to Harlem, you know what I mean? We were the big Harlem fans, you know, and it just
Black
sounded
movies.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know, Black exploitation movies.
Yeah, Black exploitation, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, but Harlem just sounded a lot tougher than anywhere. You walk through Harlem, you just hear about walking through Harlem, you kind of get scared. you may have never been there, but you get a picture of your...
Just hear it, yeah.
It looks bad. You don't want to walk through there. So definitely Harlem Heat was cool, and we made up every other thing that went with Harlem, you know, like Artie's Pool Hall, you know, that was just mythical stuff. Yeah. You know, we never
sounds
you know,
good.
That was no Artie's Pool Hall, you know, but it sounded cool.
Was Dusty the booker when you got there?
Yeah, Dusty was one of the guys who was very, very instrumental in our careers. I remember Dusty, you know, told me one of the greatest things I ever could have heard as a young man in the business. You know, I went out in this like first match. And,
you got to do it in Dusty's voice. That's a tradition.
I tell you, I get to that. He said, I went out first match, rocked it, bing, bing, bing. And, you know, yeah, because I was all about stealing the show. You know what I mean? What we did. It was about going out there and being the best on that card each and every night. And I walked back through the curtain, and Dusty said, hey, baby. They won't put you on first no more.
I was like, yeah, baby.
They won't be putting me on first. Because that's what I strive to, you know what I mean? You know, guys like myself, guys like you, Chris, I tell these young guys, you know, it's competition. It's war. You know what I mean? You could be friends. You could be, you know, comrades and all of that, you know, in war. But we going out there, and we're trying to be better than each other every night. It's good for the show. The show is going to be a much better show when we're out there competing against each other. And that's what I did. From a young man in the sport, I went out there and, tried to get a guy a contract on a weekly basis. You know what I mean? We talked about that. Chris, you know about that. I'm finna go out here and get this guy a contract. This guy may... never have looked good against anybody else, but tonight he's going to look like he's a superstar, and that guy would get a contract. You know what I mean?
We got to have this guy. He looks so good.
He's great.
Yeah, and sign him up.
What were we thinking? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So that's what, I always try to, strive to go out there and do it. I tell my young guys that's what the business is missing. Mm-hmm. The business is missing, the guys being able to go out there and create and come up with their own feel and their own way of going out there doing things, It's just like my wife, Charmelle, was just talking about you just last week, and she was like, no disrespect to anything, trust me on that. She was like, I was in the elevator with Chris Jericho, and, he's really not that big, but when you see him on television, he portrays to be bigger than everybody. He's bigger, and when you look at him on television, you never think about Chris Jericho and how big he is, because he portrays bigger than life. You know what I mean? And that's what our guys do not have the ability to be able to go out there and take the game to that level right there, to where when people watch you, they look at you and go, wow, he's good. And that's the only thing they see, is how good you are. And you were one of those guys, man. I always tell guys, when me and Chris went out there and worked, it was, the fans were in for a treat, because Chris was going to give it to them, from every perspective, as well as I was.
Right.
It was going to be something that they can walk away from going, man, that was good. I can't wait to see those guys again, and which is, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember, because you and I, thank you, bud, you and I worked together quite a few times on house shows, live events in WCW, and it was, I think one day someone didn't show up or something happened, just a random parent, because we didn't do anything on TV, and it was such a great experience, so much fun, that we ended up going on weeks and weeks and months and months and months, based around that exact concept.
Exactly.
I used to love, we used to call it DiCaprio.
DiCaprio, baby, Shakespeare. We finna go out here and do it. And that's the thing, to be able to go out there and have fun doing what you do. A lot of guys these days, they're walking on eggshells. They really don't know how to go out there and perform and have fun. I remember being in matches where I've actually laughed.
Right.
What I mean? And you have to try to cover it by tying your boot or something like that.
You make each other laugh.
Yeah. And that's the part that I try to teach my guys here at Reality of Wrestling, to go out there. I don't give them a guideline. I give them a blueprint. I give them exactly what they need to go out there and perform, and they take that blueprint and make it their own. If they need a little bit of help as far as that go, I'll help them out. But as far as them going out there and creating their stories, that's going to be totally up to them. I'm not going to be there all the time for them, and so I tell them to watch the guys who do this very well. Get on your internet and pull up some of these matches. Some of these Japanese matches are so awesome. These days they've taken the storyline to a totally different level, even from the Japanese perspective, and it's awesome to actually go out there and watch. And then they bring it to the perspective of realism into the ring, to where somebody might bleed because somebody's going to get hit, and that's what the business is. Go out there and take this thing to another level, and I cannot wait to like I say, for Reality of Wrestling, for everybody around the country to be saying, man, who's the Mysterious Q, man? This guy is so good. Mysterious Q, Brian Keith, man, the quickest feet in the South. This guy's good, man. Ryan Davidson, man, what this big brute come from? As well as I got Sean Studd here with me. The son of the legendary John Studd.
Really?
So yeah,
As a shoot?
Yeah,
okay,
shoot.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm serious.
All right.
No, I'm serious. Okay. And it's awesome, for this kid to, move all the way here to Texas to train with me.
Is he a big guy?
He's about 6'6".
Okay, right.
Yeah, and he's only 24 years old. And he was the youngest of John Studd. It's awesome actually to have him here working with me to try to get him to the next level. Hopefully we can get him into WWE sometime. But right now he's just concentrating on his form, trying to gain more as far as a mental aspect of the game, and being able to walk in there knowing, there's, it's not going to be easy. You can't work off your dad's name and expect to make it in this business these days. You got to go out there and perform at a high level, and you're a big guy, but there's going to be guys out there even bigger than you. Look at Braun Strowman. This guy's a monster. You're not going to get any bigger than that, so don't work the big guy gimmick. so he's smart. You know what I mean? He's smart before he gets there.
Just talking to him, you're such a character, man. Yeah. And you have such character. And that's, you know, yes, there are so many great matches going on in Japan and work rate. But the character aspect is something I always try and tell guys that ask me. Your character is almost as important, if not more important, than actually your skill in the ring.
You know, I tell people it's I think it's more important. Your character is, you know, just about more. I mean,
looking at Ultimate Warrior over here and Piper, or you got these dolls on the wall.
It's more important than any skill set as far as your wrestling go. I teach my guys from the wrestling aspect. You really don't have to know how to do this. You just have to act like you know how to do that part. You know what I mean? You know, because you know I'm not a trained wrestler. You know what I mean? That's a Kurt Angle.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
A guy like that. That's a trained wrestler.
Amateur Olympic
exactly,
style.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I could act like I could do the Olympic wrestling.
DiCaprio.
I could give a guy, you know, fireman's carry.
Yeah.
And look cool with it. You know, and hold on to the arm bar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if I could do that, you know, if I could pass the smell test. You know, we can win every time. I tell my guys, you know, as far as the move go, that's something that's going to come in time. But if you could go out there and beat someone up real, real good, people believe it. You know, I always tell my young guys, but I say, look at Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin didn't do anything. You know what I mean? He walked out with two knee braces on. He could barely walk. You know, but when he starts stomping a butthole, and you go in there and start, you know, throwing his head up, you know, you go, wow, man. That's Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know what I mean? Stone Cold Steve Austin could, you know, sell with the best of them. He can go out there and, you know, bump with the best of them. He could go out there and get in a good fight. And I tell you, people, the grocery store fight with Stone Cold and I, people talk about that every time I see someone.
Absolutely.
Every day, somebody talk about the fight. It wasn't a wrestling. It wasn't one move. It wasn't one suplex done in that. Oh, it wasn't one headlock. Not one top wrist lock, all wrist lock or anything. But it was a good fight, and people go, wow, that was some good entertainment. If we can go out and entertain the fans to the point to where it suspends their imagination for that moment, and they get caught up in what they were. It's just like a good movie at the end of it. You're clapping at the end of the movie, you know, like the, you know, they can really see you, you know what I mean? They can't see you. It's a movie. You know what I mean? But it was so good to where it moved you. It made you feel a certain way. And that's what I think the business is really all about. And if these young guys can go out there, I tell them, if you can make a tear come out of fans' eye, if you can, you know, take a fall out and crash up against the barrier, and some kid reaches over and say, come on, Chris, you can do it, then you're doing your job. You're not doing that.
Yeah.
You're really not doing your job.
Tell us a little bit more about the grocery store fight. How did that come to be?
You know, Stone Cold had been chasing me all around, you know, here.
Because you came in from as one of the outsider interlopers.
From WCW, of course.
Invasion.
Okay, man, he was the first person I get into it with.
You helped me win the Undisputed Championship.
Exactly. First person I get into it with is Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it was crazy. Before I even get into the grocery store fiasco. My first night of coming in, I had to, you know, do some stuff with Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm supposed to dump him on the table, and guys in the ring are working. They're supposed to spill outside, you know, take the tables, you know, take all the stuff off of it, take the TVs out and whatnot. And then I'm supposed to go out, you know, get my cue, jump over, nail Stone Cold Steve Austin, boom, drop him on the table, you know, big debut match. That's the way it's supposed to win. They give me my cue. Go. Now, I go, all the stuff is still on the television. I mean, still on the table.
The monitors, yeah.
The monitor, the top of it and everything. But I couldn't go take that stuff off. I had a spot to do. Go pick Steve up, drop him on the table. He bounces off of it, lands on the floor. Bing, bing, night's over with. I'm on my way to the next town. I get a phone call. Hey, Book. You know, what's going on? Oh, man, it was a great night, man, Steve. I didn't get a chance to see him after. I don't know what happened to him. Great night. Steve, you broke his hand.
Whoa.
You broke Steve's hand the first night I'm in, for my first day.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you break his hand?
I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. Okay, Bruce Pritchard calls me, Book. You got to do something. You know, I don't know. You know, Steve broke his hand. You need to, you know, well, give me his phone number. I'll give him a call. I apologize to him. You know, I can't give you his phone number. I tell you what, he's at this hotel. You know, you just probably met him at the hotel in the morning. You know, maybe pack his bags to the ring for him. Well, hold the hell up. I ain't packing no bags. True story. I see Steve later on. Steve, sorry about your hair. Oh, no problem, book. You know?
Maybe you polish his shoes.
Yeah.
Spit shine his car.
Exactly. You know, to pick him up from the airport. You know? You kidding me? But, the grocery store. Like I said, Steve, he chased me into the communion. You know, he chased me everywhere. You know what I mean? The confession.
Yeah.
He chased me everywhere trying to find me. I was at a bingo hall. He tried to get me there. He finally, I go to the grocery store, the Green Frog. I was just looking for some Captain Crunch.
It's called the Green Frog?
Yeah. And I just happened to go in looking for some Captain Crunch.
As you do.
That day, and I saw Stone Cold Steve Austin, so who I thought was Stone Cold Steve Austin. So I thought I'd take the opportunity to, you know, get the upper hand. Guy happened to be just a random shopper. And that's how it started.
Get some bargains.
Exactly. Turn around, Steve Austin's behind me. Boom, it kicks off. But just to actually be able to go in there and...
Was it an actual grocery store?
It was an actual grocery store. And the thing was, I don't know how much the check was. Vince had to write, but you know how they are. They write the check. But they told us, you know, we had no guidelines. We could actually just, you know, tear the whole place up. It was a one-shot deal. We could only get it, you know, in one take. And they said action. And Steve and I went to going, you know. And it was some classic TV, you know what I mean? It was all ad-lib as far as, you know, what we got the chance to do and what we got a chance to say, you know. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, it was great, great TV.
What a great story, yeah.
And the thing is, and people can say what they want to say. They can say, man, but, you know. I tell you what, I've never had one fan come up to me and say, man, Booker T, Stone Cold beat you up at the grocery store. They go, man, that was some of the best stuff I ever seen.
Of course, yeah. Stone Cold.
Which is what this business has really been built on since day one. And I believe in that. You know, I've never believed in the championships or anything like that other than I am the guy that's representing the company when I'm wearing it. I'm going to go out there and wear it proudly. I'm going to go out there and, you know, bust my butt in the ring each and every night because that's who I am for that moment. But it's always been, a pleasure for me to just go out there performing, man. I've been a performer since I was a kid, though. Me and my sister, we used to dance for the family
on
holidays and whatnot, you know. Dance contests, you know, when I was coming up.
Was it breakdancing?
Breakdancing, pop locking, you know. I'm still a pop locker. I'm still a B-boy. You know, I still go live. I'm going live on Periscope here. I'm here real soon.
To do some dancing?
I'm trying to do what you did, you know what I mean?
What's that?
Dance with the Stars.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Putting it in my bed.
Oh, you know right. What I mean? Okay.
Dance with the Stars. So I've been doing some stuff on Periscope, letting the world know that, hey, I still got it.
Nice.
Yeah,
Is that where the Spin Rooney came from? Was from
popping? From being a B-boy back in the day. And I, you know, it just happened to, you know, follow me into the ring and just happened to be my signature move after this many years, which is nuts.
How did that come to be? Because like you said, it's nuts. I bet you just did it.
I was practicing in one day in the school, and I did it in the school, and then our debut in the Global Wrestling Federation, it was about 50 to 80 people there, and they were not nice people in Dallas. Mm-hmm. We got called a lot of things in Dallas, and we were like, wow, what's going on here? You know, and I did the Spin-A-Rooney, and I realized the power of the Spin-A-Rooney. It really is a magical thing, and it makes people forget about anything, you know, race, color, religion, or anything. People just go, wow, it's cool, you know what I mean? So we've tried to, use it, you know, throughout the career, and I tell you what, never in a million years I would have thought it would be my signature move after all these years. You know, Vince McMahon every now and then, I gotta say it.
See, that was going to ask you, is that something that Vince kind of saw and focused in on it? Or because that became the thing. Was that the thing before you got to WWE?
No, like, you know, who made it famous was I can't think of his name right now, but he used to win WCW. Spinner Rooney.
Mark Madden.
Mark Madden. He made the Spinner Rooney famous, and then I realized what I had, you know, and I was like, okay, that needs to be my signature move. Mm-hmm. And the signature move is nothing, you know. And I just do it when I got a break in the match, you know what I mean, which is became, you know, something, you know, that was stupid, but the fans want to see it, and that's what wrestling is, you know. It's entertainment. I tell people all the time, you know, The Rock spit punch, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's entertainment, you know what I mean?
For sure, absolutely.
You know, all of that stuff make the fan know what we do is entertainment, but it's still literally up to us to go out there and take them on that roller coaster ride to where it's more than just a game to them. It's real to them just as it is to us.
Sure.
Yeah.
I remember, too, you guys would do that after the show sometimes, go to the ring, and then various people would do it.
We did it an hour after the show. And, you know, we was an hour after the show, went off the air trying to get the Undertaker to do the Spinner-Rooney.
Really?
You know, everybody in the locker room pretty much came out and did the Spinner-Rooney, including Vince McMahon. You know what I mean? And,
how was Vince's Spinner-Rooney?
It was not good. Yeah. You know? to try to get the Undertaker to do it, it was awesome.
So what's Taker doing when you're asking him?
He was just like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And I'm telling him it's not me. I'm getting it from the back. You know, they're telling me, Vince is telling me to do this, you know, and finally he wouldn't do it after, you know, I don't know, 20 people cup came out, and he ended up giving Big Show a chokeslam.
Oh, of course.
He walked off and never did Spinner-Rooney. Undertaker's the only one out of the company that didn't do the Spinner-Rooney, which is awesome, man.
But that's what we're talking about, like that entertainment aspect of it. Oh. And another great entertaining was you and Goldust.
And
me and Christian worked with you and Goldust for it seemed like a year.
Yeah.
But what great chemistry you guys had is like he's just out in left field, but you kept up with him with whatever wacky stuff they came up with.
I was always the type to, no matter what the situation is, you go out and make the situation the best situation on the card. No matter what it is, it could be the smallest little bitty thing, but you go out and make it the best, you know, on the card. So working with Goldie for me was just another test. I say, man, it's another test. I could, you know, I got to pass this test, you know, so I'm going to go out here and create and do whatever I have to do to make this thing happen. But people got to know that me and Goldie, we go way back. We are friends.
Mentioned Dustin earlier for your first main event.
We go way back, you know, the WCW days, you know what I mean? Having some of my best matches with him, you know, coming up to watch him, the athlete, you know, Goldie was as Dustin Rhodes back in the day, you know what I mean? And to actually be to get a chance to do something like that, you know, I've always been closer to family, Dusty as well, you know what I mean, as well as Cody.
Yeah.
You know, my last match, you know, in WCW was with, you know, Cody Rhodes.
In WWE?
Yeah.
Really?
In WWE.
No kidding.
Yeah,
okay.
It was Cody Rhodes, you know what I mean? So just being closer to family, it's just been, you know, I don't know. It goes back to Dusty, I guess, you know, and then me and Goldie got a chance to go out there and entertain.
What were some of the things that you guys would do? Like, there's some, like,
you know, at the movies. Booker T and Goldust at the movies, you know, we get the Scorpion King, you know, we go to 7-Eleven, you know, I was looking for my Booker T cups, you know what I mean? But of course, they were all out of them.
Of course, sold out right away.
Sold out. Plenty of Rock cups, you know, no Booker T cups. They all sold out, you know. So, but just to get a chance to, you know, I mean, he ended up in bed with me at one point in time, you know. So, but it was good to actually be able to character build.
Right, sure.
That's what WWE is always great at, you know, for me anyway, was giving me a chance to go out and character build, become something different than just a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from WCW, I was, you know, I would talk a little bit, but I was known for being a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
When I came from WCW. And then
more serious.
Exactly. And then I got there, and I had to totally let my guard down to go out there and do something totally different. But I was willing to do that because, coming from WCW, I wanted to prove to the guys in the locker room that I was worthy of being there. I want to be a part of the group. I want to be a part of the team. You know, I wasn't just coming there, and I don't want to bring my accolades from WCW and say, hey, guys, I'm here. You know, accept me. I'm the, you know, five-time champ. You know what I mean? No, I want to go out there and say, hey, guys, I'm going to pull my weight. And I did that. It was maybe a year and a half or so before Undertaker, you know, came and go, hey, Book, you know, over here dressed with us in the TV locker room. I made it now. You know what I mean? So it was a trial and tribulation.
But I noticed that too. Like when I first came from WWE, the Monday Night Wars was a real thing.
Oh.
Amongst the boys.
Oh, yes.
You know, and there was, you could feel a little bit of, you know, not animosity, but
tension
when we came in there. Yeah. When I came in, and yeah. Did you feel that as well?
Well, when I came in, by the time I came in, they wanted to bury every WCW guy under a pile of, you know, rubble. Yeah. Let me say that word. And I understood that. I knew that. But they knew I was talent. It was one of those things. I was going to sink or swim myself. I knew a lot of guys in WCW wasn't prepared for what they were getting ready to deal with when they came to WCW. It's a totally different animal, totally different game. But for myself, my life experiences prepared me for that way before it ever happened. You know, losing you know, a family member. You know, I had seen that before. You know, so a company closing down, that's just another day at the office. You know what I'm saying? You know, I remember a couple of guys. One of the guys asked me, "Book, what are you going to do, man? You know, it's the last day of WCW." I'm like, "I'm going to WWE. What do you think I'm going to do?" You know, but I was prepared for that, and a lot of those guys was not prepared for what we were getting ready to expect, and that was to get beat up, bruised, battered, and torn. And if you didn't have tough skin, you wasn't going to last very long there. It was about raising the WWE flag. It was about winning the war. It was about shutting Ted Turner's group down. I knew that. I understood that. That's just the way life is.
Well, there was some time between you coming to WWE after WCW, correct?
Very little.
You were one of the first.
I literally didn't wait any time. I was like the first guy to leave the company and walk in the door.
So what were your options? As you could take a buyout or you could stay?
I could have taken a 50% buyout or I could have set out the duration on my contract and just took the money.
Because a lot of guys did that.
A lot of guys
sat out, right?
Yeah, just about every one of the guys did that, unless their contract was up. I still had like a year and a half left on my contract, and I was making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I was willing to bank on myself there again and my talent. You know, Ric Flair always said a wrestler's worst enemy is time off. You know, so I didn't want to sit out and, you know, lose my momentum. I was the heavyweight champ. I was the United States champ. You know, I closed the company down.
When the company closed, you were the champ?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was United
States. And the U.S. champ.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
so
okay.
I closed the company down as the top guy. And so I was like, it's time to keep my momentum going. It's time to keep, you know, grinding. You know, the money I lose, you know, if I'm good as I think I am, I make that back.
Which is a great point.
Yeah, so I say, you know, go for it, you know, and I banked on myself and boom, here I am.
What was that like, the last day of WCW? You guys knew that was going on?
Yeah, we knew it was going on. Shane McMahon and, you know, a bunch of the guys came in and, you know, they pretty much was taking over that night.
Did you know Shane was going to be there or did he just walk in?
I didn't know who was going to be there. We just knew WWE's people.
Okay.
And then Shane walked in like a big, like the boss. Like, I'm taking over all of this. This is all of this stuff is all mine. You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay. But Shane liked me first, right off the bat, man. He liked me right off the bat, man. I was one of his, when I came into WWE, I was, you know, he was my right hand man.
Yeah. Well, they must have had an eye on you. They knew what was going on when they knew
it was coming. Linda McMahon, she said, you know, we finally got you. You know, that was one of the first things she said to me, we finally got you. And I was like, you know, for me, like I say, I was ready to. I never thought I would go to WWE. I never
thought, really?
I thought I would retire with WCW if it would have lasted. My dream wasn't to go, you know, to, you know, Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Nothing against the fine people of Halifax. We love you. Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah.
but I tell you, man, it's cold over there, man.
Yeah.
You know, WWE would go to the coldest places at the coldest times of the year. You know, and you know, and I'm like, God, man, why did they do this? You know, the map was like all over the place. They would be driving, and I saw that. WCW, they stayed in all the warm climates. You know, I'd be out on my boat fishing every weekend. I had a great gig, you know. So, but when the time came, I was prepared for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Nothing lasts forever. You know what I mean? So I was prepared for it.
Was there ever any feelers sent out by WWE during the Monday Night Wars?
Yeah. I always, when my contract would come up, they would let me know that, you know, I had a place, you know, if I wanted to try it out, you know. But I was scared, honestly. You know what I mean? I mean, I was a guy who hadn't, you know, I mean, my first place I had left, you know, gone, when I left Texas, you know, my first place I had visited was Japan, you know, and I was 25 years old, you know, so being in the business, you know, I got a chance to deal in the South. That was cool, you know what I mean? I could deal with that, you know what I mean? But WWE is World Wrestling Entertainment. They go everywhere on that map. And I didn't know if I was, you know, literally prepared for that. Mm-hmm. I knew if it, you know, when the time came, you know, I was going to get it done. But being prepared for something like that, you really never know. You know, but I got in there, you know, stuck it out, performed well. And, you know, the boys liked me.
What were the biggest differences that you noticed between WCW and WWE when you first got there?
The business. How business oriented WWE was, how everything was, you know, on schedule.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, the guys went out there and performed a television show, you know, and everything was marked and scripted properly, which was awesome. You know, the grind, of course, was different. It was, you know, you had to be have your hard hat on, and you had to keep it on all the time. You know, because that's the way you make your money in WWE. You know, how talented you are and, you know, how much bonus pay you can get. You know,
that's a good point, because WCW, it's your contract. You make X amount of dollars no matter what.
Yeah.
WWE, the higher in the cards you get, the more money you make.
Yeah, less, you know, you can get injured. You know what I mean? So I had to totally rethink the whole program. You know, how can I go out here and, you know, perform and not get hurt throughout my career, you know, and I pretty much did that. I didn't get too many injuries throughout my career, and I was able to, you know, be there for the pay-per-views and, you know, make the good money and, you know, and still weather the storm at the same time, you know, because to walk away from the business, I think, is every wrestler's dream, you know what I mean? Of course.
On your own terms.
Yeah, exactly, to be a walk away from it, and I think, you know, that's been the best part for me is to have been able to do it and walk through it and you know, see, you know, I was just thinking about that earlier. It's like, man I could only, you know, have imagined as a kid, you know, seeing some of the places that I've seen now. I never dreamt any of that stuff, and I've seen just about every place on the map, you know, and I've lived so many lives, you know what I mean, through this business. It's been great, you know what I mean? And still now, it's even better now on this side of it, you know what I mean? People ask me all the time, dude, I mean, when are you going to get one more match, man? When are you coming back, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I'm never coming back, you know? I'm like, I'm done, man. I'm like, I'm so happy, you know, now, you know, to still be able to, I'm a Hall of Famer now. You know, my name, you know, is, you know, in the history books, you know, I'm going to be remembered forever through my fans, you know, and, you know, my old tapes and whatnot. Some tape that I don't wish to ever see again, like the comment with Hogan.
but we just have to mention that quickly.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're doing a promo on Hulkster and going into your ghetto talk as Booker T would, the Harlem Heat Booker T, you let the N-word slip. If I said it, I'd get fired. If you say it, it's okay.
But I got a raise.
So, and it was live TV, right?
Yeah, it was live TV, man.
So when it slipped out, were you just like, oh no?
I was like, I'm getting fired. Like, they're going to let me go, man. They're going to fire me after this, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, God, what am I thinking, you know what I mean?
But you were in character.
I was, you know what I mean? But I feel like I let a lot of people down that day, man. Mm-hmm. It was like the worst moment of my career, literally. Probably the worst day of my life. That includes, you know, being locked up and everything. That right there hurt me, I think, more than anything ever.
Hurt you outwardly, you know, business wise, you know, or just hurt your own feelings?
Hurt me because no one has never heard me say that, you know, anywhere. You
gotcha.
Know what I mean? And to hear me say it on television, and there's a lot of young black kids out there that, you know, sometimes they think it's okay to say the word, you know what I mean? And they don't realize the struggle that we went through to not be able to be called that. Mm-hmm. And I talk about it all the time on my radio show as far as, you know, I mean, if we can take the Confederate flag down, why can't we take the N-word out of the dictionary?
Interesting. So even as a black guy, you want to see that word gone completely from blacks, whites,
eradicated,
everybody.
Totally.
And, angry, ugly word.
It really is. Yeah. You know what I mean? And kids nowadays, whether they're black, white, Hispanic, they all feel like it's okay to say it. It's just a common word now. It doesn't, you know, mean anything, you know what I mean? But it means a lot, you know, in the big picture, you know what I mean? So I just felt like it was one of the worst days of my life, and I want to stick my head in the dirt, man, and just hide, you know, from the world. you know, and now it's viral, you know, and a lot of people think it's cool, and I have to tell them, look, man, it's not cool.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can't go in the White House, you know, talking like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can't get a job talking like that, you know, when you're in the Rundle, you know what I mean? Somebody come up into the drive-thru, what up? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
you want? You know what I mean? You know, what kind of burger you want on that? Such and such? You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, in word, is that all you want?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You can't do that. You know what I mean? You can't go around with your pants sagging around your ankles and expect to get, you know, fill that application out and get the job. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about trying to educate these young kids out there.
But that's something you can use to do that.
I've been through it.
Right.
I've done it. You know what I mean? They know my life. They know my story. I'm not, you know, I went to prison. I lost my parents. I know what it's like to live with rats and roaches. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not anything that I haven't seen, but it comes a time when we have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I let a lot of people down, but, you know, I'm still atoning for it. I still got a big broom trying to clean that mess up.
See, but that shows the kind of a person you are that still bothers you.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Because
most people just laugh it off, whatever. But and that's something you can use, like you said, to help educate.
Oh yeah,
about that.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Oh,
did Hogan say anything to you? Or did
he say, you know, if I am an in, I'm a good in.
How was it talking about Hulk and talking about that time frame when NWO came into WCW? Being WCW for years was kind of always the secondary company, and then boom, biggest company in the world through the roof, and you had been there from the start. How was that for you? Did you benefit from that, or did you find?
Well, you know, I tell you, me and my brother, we became the hottest tag team, you know, when Hogan came in. That was mm-hmm. the big reason we became a hot tag team, was because Hogan, you know, he was like, man, you guys got the hottest tag team right here. Why are you out there going out there looking for guys? You know, you got them right here, you know, and he was talking about Harlem Heat. So they put Sherry Martel with us and all of that was, you know, a lot of that was because of Hogan, you know, and you know, we had a good spot, you know, the company always took care of my brother and I, you know, we were never the job
I agree, yeah, always.
For the guys that were coming in, you know, so we always kept at a certain status with the company. And so when they came in, you know, they had the green light, man, you know, they had the ball. It was, you know, had the contracts where they pretty much had creative control to do whatever they wanted. And, you know, I was always that type, you know. I grew up, you know, I don't knock the man for, you know, getting what he got. You know what I mean? I wish I had the same agent.
It's not his fault for getting $3 million a year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right. You know what I'm saying? So I just worried about my piece of the pie, you know, and that was it. You know what I mean? I never got caught up in what someone else was doing. You know what I mean? And I think that's what kept me focused as far as what I really needed to do. You know, a lot of those guys that were making a lot more money than me, you know, in the beginning, at the end, I was making more money than them, you know what I mean? So I had to, you know, keep my focus, you know. But those guys took the company and took it to another level. The NWO gave us eyes, man. We were like pay-per-view every week, you know, at TVs, you know what I mean? The place was sold out to the rafters, you know what I mean? So
stadiums we were playing.
Six stadiums in a row. Yeah, so for me to actually be able to be on that card and to be a part of that, a young kid from South Park, I was like, man, I'm standing in this party till I get good and drunk, bro. They're gonna have to throw me out, you know what I mean? So it was a ride, man. You know, I was having fun, and you know, it was cool, man.
I found what really kind of took you to the next level as a single star, and I still think about how great the series of matches you had with Chris Benoit were.
Yeah,
the best of seven.
You know, those matches gave me a chance to see how good I was, you know what I mean? Chris pushed me to a level that no one had ever pushed me to make me go out there and rise to something special. And I'm like, wow, you know what I mean? The best of seven matches with Chris was, you know, second to none in my career. I say all the time, those were the matches that made people look at me and say, man, maybe this guy, maybe he got it. Mm-hmm. Maybe he can, you know, go to the next level. I never knew, you know, how good I was until I got in the ring with Benoit, you know. But the thing is, I tell, you know, not just Benoit, you know, I tell people all the time, the Canadian, just the Canadians, period, you know what I mean, has always been able to bring something out of me that no one else has been able to bring out, you know what I mean? It's always been like we gone to the same school. We went to the same, you know, we trained the same way under the same guidelines, you know. And I don't know, just about every Canadian I've been in the ring with has been like that. But the best of seven was by far, you know, something that I never could have imagined doing. I didn't even think when Dusty Rhodes approached us with it. You know, the seven matches, that there's no way we could do seven matches and the fans want to watch that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and then we found ourselves challenging ourselves, you know, trying to one-up ourselves. And then we wouldn't even talk about it. We wouldn't even talk to each other before the match.
Yeah.
It became a competition to what we could go out there and see, you know, how good can we, you know, create, you know what I mean? And it was such an awesome thing, you know. And, you know, after it was all over with, I had knee surgery and he had elbow surgery. That's how much we had beat each other up, you know. But it was such an awesome feeling to walk out of that curtain to, it was like a heavyweight fight every week. You know, the fans treated it like a heavyweight fight. And
got a buzz about it.
For me, it was a buzz. Even, you know, even now I get goosebumps thinking about it because it was like a buzz, you know, that I never had before going into a wrestling match. You know what I mean? This is wrestling. You know what I mean? But with him, man, it wasn't wrestling, man. It was a fight, man. It was something, you know, that...
Because Chris didn't like to call a lot of stuff. You mentioned that. He would rather not call anything in a lot of ways.
It was all feel. It was like a lot of feel, and we would just go out and, you know, we knew what we, you know, had to go out there and do as far as the finish goes. But as far as the match goes, we would never talk to each other. We would, you know, and the only way we could make it, you know, something special is we couldn't know what we were going to do from one match to the next. That's the only way we can make it different. So we just went out and just freelanced the whole thing. And just say, let's see how this work out, you know what I mean? So at certain times he would be doing something I didn't think it was right because I need to get over right here. So boom, I stop him right in his tracks, you know what I mean? And same thing with him, you know, sometimes I get hit so hard, you know what I mean? I was like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? But I have to snap back and realize, oh, that's Chris. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way it's going to be. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, like you said, wouldn't break your nose or knock any teeth, but you're going to feel it.
Yeah, you know? Man, you're going to feel it, and you're going to feel it to the utmost. It's going to, like I said, you're going to know that you was in a war. You go back to the hotel that night, and you go, wow, you know. But that was the difference, you know, for me. To take that soreness back to the room was, you know, that was my badge.
Yeah.
You know, that was, you know, the... You know, me walking through that, you know, through the danger zone and coming out, you know. So I loved it, you know, having that pain, you know, each and every night. You know, I remember getting chopped by Chris over 30 times in one match. And
each one hurts like
hell. You know, but no, it was one of those nights where I literally wanted to test myself. You know what I mean? So literally every couple of seconds I'm saying, light me up. You know, so beep. And I'm like all little boys in the back watching this. And I'm like, they know they better not mess with me after watching this. You know what I mean? I just wanted to show them how tough I was.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I wanted to use Chris to do it because he was not going to let up off me. He was going to just lay it in. And so he would go out there and just beat me up. And over 30 chops, and I let my students watch it one night, and I let them know, I was like, all of that was me, man. You know, that's what the business, that's the business, going out and, you know, having that gladiator mentality to, you know, want to beat the guy up that you're going out there and performing with, no matter how much you like the guy, you know. And I always told, I tell a lot of my students, you know, and even, you know, guys that I've worked with in WWE, I say, how many times have you gone out there and actually wanted to beat up the guy that you're working with? And a lot of them, you know, they might say, you know, I don't know. You know, so that's you thinking wrong. You want to beat him up every night. You know what I mean? I'm like, I work with Chris Jericho. I wanted to beat him up every night.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like Chris when we were working together. I'm like, I'm like, we didn't go out and hang out in the bar. Like, I wanted to beat that guy up. I really didn't like him. People say, who was one of the, you know, guys you really didn't get along with? I didn't really get along with Chris. You know what I mean? But that was because we were in the freaking war.
Right.
You know what I mean? When you're in the war, you ain't got time to like nobody.
No.
If
you play for the Dallas Cowboys and I play for the New York Jets, you know, we want to win the game.
Exactly.
If I can tackle you and take your head off, I'm going
to
do it.
We don't have time to be buddies. I mean, I can't get to the quarterback and lighten up on him because I play for the opposite team. You know,
that's
you got to go out there and you got to light him up. And that's what I tell people, my best matches with guys that I really liked. But in the ring, you would never know it. Because we went out there,
great point.
We beat each other up. it was all fair and love and war.
Yeah.
You know, and then when we come back through the curtain, you know, sorry about that shot, bro. Yeah. I mean, that's great. You know, you used to give me
that used to just knock my block up every time was
Spine Buster.
Yeah, like the kind of the Alabama
slam
thing.
You took it better than anybody else, though. It wasn't me. It was you. You just took it. You could have taken. You could have easily took the easy route. You know what I mean? You could have easily have taken the easy route. And I tell people about that spot all the time.
Oh, do you?
I actually showed it to my students. I say, Chris did this spot better than anybody that I've ever done it with. And he did it every time. And it wasn't because of me. It was because of you. You wanted to go out there and make
that
match better. It had a great reaction. And people go, wow, God, I mean, that's got to be it. 1, 2, and you barely kick out at 3. Oh, we got him. Just lay right there. Don't move. You know? I mean, that's the business. You know what I mean? And that's the lost art of two guys going out there and performing. That's the lost art right there. I always tell my guys, you know, we're out there competing, you know, against each other, but we're definitely working with each other because it's not about you and I. It's about the fan that's watching it. And if they walk away from it, you know, like I did when I went to watch the Shaw Brothers production at the Metro Theater downtown, you know, kicking somebody when I left, it was good.
Yeah,
if I wasn't doing that,
movies from the 70s,
exactly. If I wasn't kicking somebody, you know, chopping somebody, you know, chopping up, you know, on my way to the bus stop, you know, it wasn't a good movie. You know what I mean? But if I came out of there, man, you know, jumping up, it was a good movie, and that's what we do.
What finally made you decide to? Do you say retire? I want to use that word lightly because we're talking about wrestling. But what made you finally decide to step down from?
You know,
working?
I had a neck issue some years ago when I was thinking about coming back to WWE before the Rumble in 2011. And I went to Pittsburgh and I got the full run through and everything. And the doctors told me that I had something pinching something. And but he told me I could get worked on and get it fixed, or I could retire and have no problem. So I just say, man, I've had a great time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like it's no reason for me to go to get it fixed and to go back and do what? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have nothing to prove anymore. You know what I mean? And I just felt like it was time for me to walk away from it. I do really honestly, truly feel like life goes in seasons, you know, spring, summer, winter, and fall, and you got to know when the season has changed. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, it's not like I can't go out there and do it. I still train with my students. Even after the neck, was diagnosed, I still had the full run with Cody and still went on the road. So I could still do it, but, you know, the quality of life for me to be around for, you know, my little Kennedy Rose and my little Kendrick James, my 5-year-old twins, to see my girl walk down the aisle one day, you know, see my son, you know, graduate from college, you know, that's going to take a lot of work, you know, and that work can't be done, you know, on the road, traveling, you know, mm-hmm. you know, 300 days out of the year, I need to be at home, you know, I need to be training myself to actually make it to that point, you know what I mean, as well as being there for them, you know, for every occasion, like little girls, you know, Daddy's Day, Dad's Day, mm-hmm. whatever, you know what I mean? My son, you know, I got to be there for him in every way, shape, form, you know. So I just felt like it was time for me to set it out, as well as, you know, I have a son that's 33 years old, just turned 33 wow. December 29th. And him and I are getting ready to write a book together.
And, really? That's
my fatherhood and how I was being Booker T's son, you know, because I wasn't there a lot.
Right.
He grew up, you know, and he missed out on a lot of things, you know, and I refused to let that happen to me a second time around. Mm. Yeah, so that's
so. But once a week, you go on the road to do commentating.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you like that?
Well, you know, the commentary thing is cool, you know, but now I'm doing the kickoff show, which is cool.
Right. For Raw.
Yeah, Raw kickoff show, which is great for me, you know, because now I get a chance to actually still do WWE, but it's really so hard to actually focus on Dolph Ziggler and Sheamus and, you know, Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose and all of those guys when I got, you know, Mysterious Q and, you know, Ryan Davis.
Right, that's Ryan your gang, Keith, yeah.
All of my guys. It's so hard, you know what I mean? So to be able to do the Monday kickoff show and then have the rest of the week off to think about reality of wrestling and growing my enterprise here and, you know, doing my boxing events, my MMA events, concerts, whatnot, become, you know, a mogul here in the city. I'm already getting close to being the mayor. You know, I already got my own day.
Hey, you've been a main eventer since you got into the business. Now you're the mayor.
Main eventer since day one. You know what I mean? So that's just time for something different. But I love it, man. I'm the happiest person in the world right now. Still being able to work for the company, WWE, still being a Hall of Famer. Been having 5-year-old twins. I'm having my own wrestling company, doing my radio thing every week. I love that. You know, it's just awesome. You know, I wouldn't say it's awesome being Booker T, but Booker T's pretty awesome.
On that note, last question, Booker. If you had to pick out one or two of your favorite matches that stand out in your mind, is the one that you can think of?
Oh, man, favorite match stand out. I tell you, man, I tell people all the time, I never been able to remember matches and stuff like that. I remember the Best of Seven series because of what it was. Mm-hmm. And what it did for me as a performer forever. But I never remember matches, man. That's for the fan to remember. You know, the fan can remind me about it, and I'll say, yeah, man, I remember that. You know what I mean? But if it make them feel a certain way, which is what I tried to do throughout my whole career, is make the fans feel a certain way when they watch me, you know, it was worth it. But the memory is for the fan. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good way to end it off, man. Well, you're always one of my favorites to work with.
All right, man.
Thank you, brother.
Hell yeah.
There's no better way to get the blood pumping on a cold winter's day than to pop in an earbud and listen to a chilling tale.
What leaves me shaking to this day is the memory of Charlotte's face hanging out from behind the tree, looking at me.
Chilling Tales, the podcast, with new mind-bending stories every week. Subscribe now at iTunes and get your tale chilled at podcastone.com.
Booker T is a busy guy, and what a great conversation we had. He invited me to his performance center. He had his gym and his ring set in there. Reality of Wrestling getting ready to move to the World's Gym Arena in Houston, Texas. January 30th is the huge debut of the brand new Reality of Wrestling. RVD will be there. Go to realityofwrestling.com for ticket information. You got to go check it out. Booker's so busy. He does some commentary for WWE. He does the pre-shows for WWE. He's got his wrestling school. He's also got his own radio show on Sports Radio 610 in Houston. It's called Heated Conversations. You can also hear it as a podcast at Play It. I've done it before. Booker, good guy. Fun to talk to you. Great energy. I thank him for being here, and I thank you for being here. And once again, thank you for listening. And make sure you never miss an amazing episode like Booker T today. Never miss an amazing episode of Talk is Jericho. You got to go hit that subscribe button at iTunes. Leave us a comment and a 5-star rating as well. That boosts the profile of this show, which gives me more power to do what I want with the show and get the guests that I want for the show. You can help us do it, man. It really helps me out. And also, speaking of help, Amazon, longest running sponsor of Talk is Jericho. Easiest way to support this podcast, just use the Talk is Jericho links. You can find them by going to podcastone.com, clicking on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada, Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover these costs of producing this show. No hidden fees or extra charges. You can buy just whatever you want on Amazon. It's Amazon, man. Go Google whatever you want. I bought a microwave on there today, and I did it through the TIJ link. Kick back a couple bucks to myself, Robin Peter to PayPal. Yeah, boy. It's the best price, the best deals, and we can do it for you through the Talk is Jericho links. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit that Talk is Jericho button. All my great sponsors are there, including Amazon, including DDP Yoga with the DDP Yoga Now app. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga app. And don't forget Denso Iridium TT Spark Plugs. Get your car running smooth as a baby's bottom. All right. Keep on listening next week, and keep on listening right now for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And next week, I got one of the hottest new bands going on right now, the Butcher Babies. Carla and Heidi will be here. They're rocking it for heavy metal. And they're doing a great job. And they're what a gimmick they have. It's very, very cool. It's great story. Two chicks in the male-dominated world of rock and roll, and they are killing it. Sisters doing it for themselves. Butcher Babies here next Wednesday. We'll see you here. Thank you very much. Stay hard. Stay cool. Stay hungry. And a big yeah, boy. Sucker!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha F-335 acoustic guitar, just $99. Or get a Luna Soprano ukulele, only $49. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing. Lessons for the beginner on your list. And gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.